The question of host status, I think most of us in systematic biology know, is quite important in speciation, and there's been a lot of study done, but it's also very important in regulatory entomology, determining the need for quarantines for especially fresh tropical fruit. And what I am doing is going to talk about is a comparison we did of three species. One was Anostrepha ludens, the Mexican fruit fly, which normally breeds in Rutaceae, especially the genus Citrus. The West Indian fruit fly, which is breeds mostly in soft tropical fruits in several families, but is not known as a pest in Citrus, but may be of some host status. And Anostrepha serpentina, which is mainly restricted to the family Zapotaceae, which is not imported too much to the United States, but the flies do come in. This work, we sort of formalized the needs for this kind of work in a paper that Martina Lua and I wrote that came out in the 2008 Annual Review of Entomology. And the paper was gave an outline of some methods of how to do this. And once we had this published, then I felt I had justification to take a lot of data that we had collected and fit it into the flow system. What we're interested in is this part out down in this corner. Once a species has been determined to not be a very strong natural host, but potentially still a regulatory host, that means the flies can come into the United States even though they don't normally attack a product. Then the question becomes, is it capable of completing its life cycle or not capable? So what I'm going to talk about are methods that are right down in this corner. The standard that started the methodology came out of New Zealand. It was called the NAS standard. It was later published in 1992 by Cowley et al. And it, in fact, it was designed mostly for the genus Bactrocera, and hasn't. We don't think it's that adaptable to Ceratitis and Anostrepha, the two family or two genera that mainly are of concern to the United States. Bactrocera is too, but we have pretty good ways of controlling it. The summary of the infestation test following Crowley's work was, first of all, to compare grapefruit, which is a marginal host, if at all, for Anostrepha obliqua, with mangoes, which are a good host, a very important host for it. And as you can see, we tested fewer total fruit. The fruit by female by day totals were about half for mangoes, but the total number of larvae reared out of them was much, much higher. And you can see that definitely the question and answer is the grapefruit are a much worse host. The survival rate, even with forced infestation, is much lower in the grapefruit for the mangoes. But it's hard to make a regulatory decision because some did survive. So some could come in a truck with several hundred thousand fruit. If we look at tree-attached and harvested fruit, which is what Crowley et al. Were really important, thought was important, again, Ludens was able to infest much better than obliqua. But really, red grapefruit that are grown in Texas are not a very good host during the normal season, the normal shipping season, for even Anostrepha ludens. Now, once they get older, they become a really, really good host, but not at the commercial stages. And you can see that harvested and attached to the tree obliqua were about the same. So keeping the fruit on the tree does not maintain the host resistance. But the problem here is that when you're going just from adult to the larvae or pupae, without looking at what's going on inside the fruit or the maturation or the different stages, you really don't know much about the nature of the resistance. And it's hard to design an approach to allow this very poor host to be imported with no treatment. So what we did was, it does answer the question, but it doesn't tell us much to do an interior protocol writing that allows us to import. So we had a new system. You're going to have to take it on faith I did this right, because I don't have time to go through all the matter. But it was 8 grapefruit per cage, 32 obliqua, ludens, or serpentina were placed. They were placed in separate cages, not together. 2 days exposure, and the fruit were wrapped with aluminum foil, so, and then a hole was cut in it so we could find the eggs without having to destroy the whole fruit, and we could observe the manner of oviposition. And then we gave them 25 days development time. 15 of the days were exposed in trays, and then we tried to rear to adults, but since we reject loads that contain third instar larvae, we considered if they made it to third instar, they were going to be rejected at the port, so we said those are infested also. The dissection, we started at 3 days, and then at 7, 17, and 24, and 31 days, we took samples of fruit out of that mass that was infested and dissected them and looked at where the larvae, eggs, and if pupae were there, where they were in the fruit, whether they are alive or dead, and scored both the mortality and the rates of development for the three species under this system. This is just a picture. The fruit were field fruit. The orchard was not treated with any insecticide, so there were no pesticide residues, and the fruit looked pretty ugly. And then after they were wrapped and numbered, we put them into the cages. And then for 2 days, so the fruit were only wrapped for 2 days. We don't think that really disturbed their metabolism very much. And then they were moved into rearing. But you see down in the corner, this was a lemon. There's three sections. There's the flavida, which is the colored part where the oil glands are on the outside, and then the white part of which is the albedo, and that's where a lot of the glycosides and resistance factors are found. And then the pulp, which is where most of the larvae get most of their development, and that's where the sugars are, and does not, in the citrus we worked on, does not seem to have any resistance factors other than perhaps low sugar. If we look at Anastrapha obliqua and Anastrapha ludens, you can see one interesting factor was ludens laid a lot more eggs, inserted them into the fruit, than obliqua did, which makes sense. It's not the native host for obliqua. But obliqua left most of its eggs on the surface of the fruit where they died, and so certainly they'd be predated on and die in the field. And the few that were put into the flavido had high mortality compared to ludens that had almost no mortality. And then you can see that the flavido does contain a lot of resistance factors, and there was a lot of mortality for obliqua there. The reason there wasn't much for ludens is because they were all inserted below the flavido. And if we look at in the albedo live and albedo dead, the interesting thing here is that ludens had about the same mortality rate as obliqua did. Well, obliqua was quite a bit higher, but ludens had about 50% mortality rate and is not doing that well in grapefruit either, which was a little bit of a surprise to me. If we compare that with Anastrapha serpentina, here the eggs were all inserted. Neither species put them on the surface. The albedo, actually, serpentina was a little bit more present there, but that was largely because they had a lot of the ludens had burrowed into the pulp. So the numbers were higher for serpentina in the albedo. They didn't seem to be able to handle the toxins that well, and so they moved into the pulp. If we look at larvae, for one thing, I couldn't look at larvae in obliqua because they were almost all dead. We only had five or six larvae that survived. But if you look at what's going on here, and here I had to restage it because of the numbers, but in the albedo alive, ludens was much higher than serpentina. And the albedo dead, yeah, they were too, much higher because there were a lot more eggs. In the pulp alive, both species produced some, but relatively few live ones, and in the dead ones, neither species died very much. So to give some conclusions, Anastrapha ludens and Anastrapha serpentina oviposited into the albedo of the grapefruit. Obliqua did not. And this isn't just the length of the ovipositor. This has a number of other factors. They don't seem to know their way around on the fruit. The numbers of larvae surviving the albedo was about 10% for ludens and 15% for serpentina. They did better, serpentina, than on the non-host. But the numbers of larvae surviving from eggs to adults or to late third instar larvae was 30 times higher for Anastrapha ludens. The real important thing here is that We can find where the resistance factors are by tracing samples through. We did this, it took about 6 months per test, and we were able to do this with one technician in 6 months. And I think it is a reasonable approach rather than just adult to larvae like the NAS standard recommended. Thank you.
We have time for a couple of questions.
Don.
Is there a big difference then between the grapefruit and the lemon?
The lemons are, unfortunately, a pretty good host, and it's going to make our Argentine friends very unhappy because they want to ship us a non-host. The reason is because the females shove their eggs way down into the pulp. They really drill away on it. So yes, there is a difference. Right now, the survivorship in lemons is higher than any of them. And lemons is the only one that's considered officially by APHIS standards a non-host, and limes. So it could be that cage tests aren't the way to do with everything. Yeah.
How much is search inefficiency for apes and larvae in the different parts of the
food? Oh, I'm sorry. Peter asked, what's our searching efficiency for eggs and larvae in different parts of the fruit? I can't tell you because the ones we didn't count, we didn't count. But I know from the normal egg batch size for Anisotropa ludens is between 15 and 40, and that was about the number she was reporting out, assuming they laid the same numbers. Vicki? So we could find the eggs. The Anisotropas are very neat in the way they stick their ovipositor down in. They don't leave a big hole the way the medfly does, or Bactrocera do. It's very hard to find them otherwise.
So I can't.
Just
click next. Okay. Our next speaker doesn't have any slides, unfortunately. So we're going to try and record his presentation vocally for the internet anyway. Let's just see if it works. It might not accept this. But the next speaker is Shashank Nilaki. And the title of the talk is Detection of the Panicle Rice Mite in the United States: Management or Eradication?